Could fight them with conventional weapons. That could take years and cost millions of lives. No, in this case, I think we have to go all out. I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part.
We're just the guys to do it.
Let's do it.
It's National Poultry Murder Week again. In honor of the holiday weekend, what's 2013's biggest turkey?
I'm Katie Rich, and I'm going with Olympus Has Fallen because I am still angry that you people didn't give White House Down the respect it deserves.
Hey, it's me, David the Seven, and I'm going to say A Good Day to Die Hard was a bad day for 2013.
I'm Matt Patches, and I'm going to go with Grown Ups 2 because by the fifth reference of the burp snart, which is a burp, a sneeze, and a fart all at once, I was circling back just to hysteria from feeling awful.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm David Ehrlich, and the worst movie I saw this year was probably CBGB, which was awful beyond belief. But the worst movie you saw this year was probably Man of Steel.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast. Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room, Episode 1, for real this time. It's Tuesday, November 26, 2013. As you've guessed by now, this is our new show. Operation Kino is no more. Fighting in the War Room lives on. I wanted to say before we start with the proper show that we have moved iTunes domains as well. You may have noticed that there's a new iTunes feed available for you, which means we need your reviews again. I apologize, but they will be very helpful to you
now more
forward.
Than ever.
Well, people
now
might reconsider, you know. They might have hated it at first and listened to the show, and they've come to appreciate it, so they can revoke those hateful feelings.
If you enjoy the show and would like us to continue, it would be a huge help if you wouldn't mind leaving us a review on Fighting in the War Room on iTunes.
And you can review the new theme song or anything else new that we've added that makes this even better than Operation Kino ever was. We'll be slowly building our way back up and maybe eventually stop begging you for iTunes reviews.
But probably not yet.
Yeah, but not yet. David will be begging you for the rest of time because that's how he gets his self-worth, I think.
That's
how that
true.
Works, right?
It's true. That's how I'm told I could get self-worth if we ever got enough iTunes reviews for me to have any self-worth.
Yeah, so it's a never-ending quest for David, so help him achieve inner peace by leaving us some iTunes reviews and helping us kick off this new show correctly. In the last couple of days, this week was a very big one for music videos, which is something that very rarely gets attention these days unless it's Miley Cyrus naked on a wrecking ball or I guess Robin Thicke had his moment. Music videos are something that I rarely pay attention to, even if the internet at large is paying attention to it. But the two this week from Bob Dylan and then Pharrell, which is maybe the most unlikely pair of newsmakers I could have come up with for this given week.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a very specific type of music video, right?
Yes, exactly. They debuted interactive music videos, and interactive in a way that I had never seen before, and I would love to hear one of you explain to me the technology behind it, though I don't know that either of you will be able to. But basically, you know, Bob Dylan has like a Rolling Stone. Is it like a Rolling Stone? Yes.
Yes.
And it's basically set up like a television, and you flip channels, and every channel is synced up to the point and the song that you were on. So you see someone on QVC lip-syncing to Like a Rolling Stone. You see the Property Brothers. You see, sports television. You see the local news. It's all these fake TV channels built like it. And it's this really remarkable, surreal experience, as if you're in a movie montage, and everyone in the world has synced up to the same song, but you're the one controlling it and you're flipping the channels. And then a few days later, Pharrell debuts a video for his song Happy, which is on the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack. They are pushing very hard for it to win an Oscar. I have a vinyl copy of that song in my house that they sent me for my Critics Voting Awards, which is mostly irrelevant. But this works a little bit differently. It's a website. It's called 24hoursofhappy.com. And you can go, and it's got the same song playing in a loop, kind of like the Bob Dylan one. But they every rotation of the song has a different person dancing in a different spot in L.A. And you can kind of spin around the clock and watch a different person, and the song will keep track of it, just like in the Bob Dylan one. But you can go and you can see a Despicable Me minion dancing, or Steve Carell and Pharrell, and every hour, actually. It took me a while to figure that out. And it is very reminiscent of a movie near and dear to David Ehrlich's heart, Girl Walk All Day, with people dancing all across a cityscape.
I really hope that the movie near and dear to David's heart was Despicable Me too. So that's
That one as well, which I think David's a big Minions fan.
Lives for it.
I mean, show of hands, you guys have watched both of these, right?
Show of hands.
I'm raising my hand.
A vocal show of hands.
Do I watch music videos? Yeah. I do.
I actually think that this
is a really – I mean, what you're essentially saying is echoing my feeling that this is a really interesting time for music videos, not only in the arena of sort of novelty music videos, or ones that seem to function more naturally as installations than they would on like MTV or VH1. But I watch – you know, VH1 every morning when I'm getting in the shower or whatever for work. And
do you really?
Well,
Before you go to work in the building where VH1 is produced?
I put it on so that Love and Hip Hop's on when I get home from work. It's a vicious cycle. Anyway, even in these usually very mainstream music videos, and certainly in the ones that I see on the internet and the pitchforks and the like, there's a lot of really interesting filmmaking that's happening that's not getting any coverage from sites that ostensibly cover film, like my own, unfortunately, and I've been meaning to change that. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that these are you can elaborate more on those particular examples, but I do think it's a really interesting time for music videos.
Well, I don't know if – I mean, I was thinking of the Pharrell one in particular because I spent more time on it. I don't know if that qualifies as interesting filmmaking, but I do think it's interesting as an installation. It's interesting as a way to experience a song and to experience art and to experience dance. And we'll be talking about musicals later in the show, and I can talk more about this. But the feeling of watching someone dancing to a song has this very specific joy to it, and it's not something that you get very often. I mean, even in a – regular music video, you're not very often watching someone singing and dancing, especially as joyfully as they are in this video, which is something that the Blurred Lines video actually did. I think that's part of what made it so interesting, in addition to the naked ladies. It also had Pharrell in it, as it happens. But it had people kind of happy and dancing along to a song. And I really enjoyed the very basic pleasure of that. And the fact that I had control over it and I could kind of wander around inside this world they had created made it that much more enjoyable. It was so much more relevant to me than any other traditional kind of music video, no matter how good the filmmaking in that might be.
Oddly enough, I felt kind of turned off by both of them, even though I enjoyed them. Well, let me get this idea out here. I enjoyed both of them, especially the Bob Dylan video with the television flipping back and forth, mostly because they at first I'm like, wow, how did they find all this footage to match it? And then it only dawned on me that they had filmed all these different segments, and that was a feat in itself. The Pharrell one didn't really do anything for me because I kept – and when I kind of put it side by side with the Dylan video, I just like, what is the purpose of both of these? I mean, what are they saying about the songs? How are they extending the narrative of these songs? What comment are they making here? If it's just visually stimulating, what is the purpose? And I couldn't really find one, especially with the Pharrell video, where it's like, okay, you have a 24-hour music video, great. Like, I don't care. I don't want to watch Pharrell walk down a hall and just sing the song because it's at the 8 p.m. hour. I want it to have more purpose. And I thought it was interesting that by the time both of these went viral, I was seeing everyone share them. Everyone was talking about them. Everyone was really intrigued by the conceits of these two videos. No one was really talking about the people who made them. I still don't know who the directors of these videos are. And it made me think about, you know, how a decade ago, I was obsessed with these DVDs of Michel Gondry and Spike Jonze and Chris Cunningham, and, you know, finding out David Fincher's music videos and just like where he came from, and all these directors who kind of merged from more artful videos from the late 90s. And I'm just thinking, are these the same people who are doing that, even though the medium is innovating? Is it innovating artistically, or is it innovating to cater to our need for interaction, that we need to be controlling it, even though, I mean, for me, I just don't want to be. I want to see a vision and watch it. I don't know. It wasn't that interesting to me after, you know, 2 minutes of clicking.
Well, I think that it's I don't know. I think that, you know, they shouldn't be subservient to what you want as far as experience goes. But I do feel.
Well, that's not what I mean by that. It's not that I demand certain things. They weren't artistically intriguing.
That's where I agree with you. I think that the Pharrell video is kind of a bummer because it's first of all, the song isn't very good, and it's like being in fucking Abu Ghraib listening to it, you know, 24 hours in a row. I can't even imagine. I think that's like a legitimate
torture that they deploy. One would do that.
Well, especially when you compare it to something like Girl Walk All Day, which is constantly invigorating, you know, batch of music that is dynamic and changes. But, you know, it harkens back to Christian Mark Lee's The Clock and doesn't do anything interesting with that premise. I mean, simply clicking around and watching new people in different spots of Los Angeles sing this song. I mean, I don't understand necessarily how the form enhances the function or vice versa. I think the Bob Dylan one is much more interesting. Although I want to go back to something Katie said at the very beginning of the segment where she was talking about the technology involved in them. And while I'm certain there's technology at play here, specifically on the website of things that I can't even come close to understanding, I think that ultimately both of these are very analog ideas. I think that the Bob Dylan one in particular is something that could have been accomplished at any time in and of itself, of having, you know, the simultaneous parallel recordings going on and simply just having them press play and having someone hit a button and flip around. I think what's so interesting about them is how they use the veneer of, you know, web 2.0 or 3.0, whatever the fuck generation we're in now, to make it feel impossible or so advanced, when in fact they are sort of basic ideas that happen, especially in the Bob Dylan case, to be executed very well.
I'm going to jump in really quick here and say that I don't think either of these videos necessarily are like the pinnacle of interactive music videos I've gotten to play with since the web was invented and they became a thing. But especially since the Bob Dylan video was released on the same day as the horribly traditional to the point of trolling Kanye West video for Bound 2. That is just him having sex with his naked wife on a green screen motorcycle ride, I think really puts into stark relief what you can do with this thing that, with the exception of Bob Dylan, is sort of just part of the marketing process. It's like, we have a single, so there should be a video, and you could do what Kanye West does and just sort of throw the middle finger at your own audience, or you could at least attempt to do something what Pharrell's doing, which is trying to get some buzz and bring people to the track. I don't know if it's necessarily, without, like, you know, very specific music videos, like, you know, Jay-Z's Picasso Baby, which is trying to be saying something, I'm not necessarily sure that everything is trying to live up to the Patches standard of, you know, putting a show on, a thematic show along with your music.
Yeah, there's something to be said for me about a song that's called Happy and having a music video that gives you a million different ways to be happy while watching someone dancing. It's pretty simple for me, and not that I don't think you could do something more interesting with that, especially with Girl Walk All Day existing in the world and doing something more, but I got a lot of pleasure out of watching it. And I think that the Patches standard should be applied to most things, including geological events.
What is the Patches standard?
I don't know.
What is the equation for that? Now I'm very curious.
It's up to our mathematician listeners to help us figure out what this looks like. Write it on a chalkboard and send us a picture.
I really want to know if we're just past the point of like single idea videos or just straightforward videos. What's the last one that really impressed people before we go out on this subject? I'm curious.
Well, no, I don't think we are necessarily, because I think that's something that music is going to lend itself to. I just think we're in a period where that seems hacky, because we're in the teenage years of the music video. So we've already seen, you know, direct one-to-one translations, and we've already seen November Rain. So now we're just sort of out on the outskirts of what this art form is, I suppose.
If we can just get more versions of Fatboy Slim's Weapon of Choice video with Christopher Walken dancing, I feel like that may... Let's just do that every time.
Don't be shy by the tone of my voice.
So if you have Facebook friends from high school who you haven't talked to in like 10 years, then you may be in the same situation I am, where you go on Facebook and you see them sharing links from Upworthy. It is a website that aggregates viral videos and gives them amazing socially conscious headlines that'll just suck you in, you know. Oh my God, you're never going to believe what you're seeing in this video. It's going to touch your heart. It's going to make you cry. It's going to make you think. It's pretty obnoxious, but it sucks people in and gets people sharing, and that Upworthy has made a name for this, so much so that they can now be lampooned for what they do. So I guess we have to admire them in some way for cracking this code, but also we can also make fun of them. And I had the pleasure of reading a list, of course, on Funny or Die. They cobbled together, they took old movie posters and they gave them new titles, Upworthy headline appropriate titles. And I wanted to challenge you by just reading these. So I'm stealing content here. Just like Upworthy.
Just like Upworthy.
So in true Upworthy spirit, I want to turn on you guys. I'm going to read you the Upworthy titles to these movies, and I want you to guess what movies I'm talking about here. Understood? Easy?
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Here we go. First one. The first 10 minutes will make you sob. The next 86 will change the way you think about balloons.
Worthy.
Yes, you... yes, Upworthy.
Change the way you think... You
didn't even get
the way
to the
you think
balloons.
About what? Yeah, you... Let's have Jeopardy rules here. I want to hear the rest of the
yes,
title.
Yes, the last part of that, the next 86 will change the way you think about balloons. yes, so some of these might be obvious, but let me finish here because they're very well done. Here's one. How one archaeology professor is taking the preservation of ancient relics into his own hands.
Indiana Jones.
Oh, yes. Oh, although Raiders of the Lost Ark is technically the...
Couldn't it be any of them?
Here's one that you probably won't get. I couldn't be more impressed by a group of students cutting class.
Breakfast Club. No. They don't cut
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
No.
Oh.
No.
No.
This one stars Robin Williams.
Dead Poets Society?
Yes.
Jack.
A Peter Weir film. how about this? The unbelievable, unforeseen risks of being an overweight woman in America.
Precious.
No, but that is a pretty good guess. A thriller, won some Oscars, early 90s.
Oh,
Dave has an affinity for this series.
I have an affinity for this series.
You do.
Oh, Silence of the Lambs?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh, shoot a real big fat girl.
Fear size 10.
All right, here's one.
Trouble.
This is actual real magic taking place, but it's not about that at all.
Now You See Me?
No.
The
Prestige?
No.
Oh.
Little less obvious in the magic department.
Oh. Real magic taking place?
This is a tough one. I feel like I'm going to have to give you this one. This is Liar Liar.
Oh.
What?
That's some real magic going on.
We could have sat here for the rest of our time on this earth and never gotten there.
All right. This teenager doesn't do what his parents tell him to do, and we kind of love him for it.
That's Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
No, older.
Oh, Home Alone.
Older.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Older than...
Rebel Without a Cause?
Yes!
Yeah, there you go.
That is very good. War isn't always black and white, but in this case, it is. Except for
Dr. Strange Love.
No, except for that one girl.
Schindler's List.
Oh, Schindler's List. Damn it, I got too excited about it being relevant
to our
new title. I know,
you were close. How about this? At 15 minutes, you'll be in tears. At 57 minutes, you'll lose all hope, but you'll stand and cheer at an hour and 12 minutes.
Jesus.
It's a pretty tough one. Very motivational, though.
13?
It's really inspiring, and it's definitely about football.
Oh.
Rudy?
Yeah, Rudy. Radio.
Radio.
I feel like they may have taken a different angle in the radio. All right. One more here. If you've heard someone say, love the sinner, hate the sin, you'll want to watch this.
Bad Boys?
Dead Man Walking.
No. Sins. Sin is the key here.
Seven?
Yes.
Seven.
Oh.
And that wraps up Upworthy. So
are any of these better than the actual taglines?
All of them? No, wait, none of them. I hope this actually earns us an Upworthy headline.
Yeah, let's get on Upworthy, and then we'll get so many followers.
We need a politically or socially conscious message for this podcast. What can it be?
It's about the preservation of film and making fun of radio.
Spice that up.
I promise I'm not going to make you talk about The Music Man this whole time, but it's an old musical that I completely love, and it's very weird in its own way, and it's a very traditional musical in that almost all of the story is told with music.
Did you watch The Music Man because Ratzenberger brought it up a couple weeks ago?
No, I didn't. I brought it because it's been on my DVR, and like I was taking a nap, and I wanted something to watch, and I know that movie by heart.
And John Ratzenberger whispered into your ear.
I know. No, this was like a classic in my childhood. I watched it as a kid. I really like traditional musicals, and I was really excited about Frozen, which is coming out this week, which has a bunch of original songs. You have probably heard Idina Menzel belting one of them when any radio goes by or any ads for Frozen come on television. But as Patches and I can discuss later, it doesn't totally cross the bar of being a straight-up musical. And in a similar vein, a really different vein actually, but not quite a musical, next week is Inside Llewyn Davis, which has this soundtrack that's wonderful that you've probably heard people talking about, but is also a movie that features music, but isn't exactly a musical. And we're in an interesting period for a musical. It's been a year since Les Mis. The movie made a crazy amount of money, like probably way more money than you think it did. You should look it up. It will probably... This is very Upworthy. Look up the box office for this movie.
What movie
blow
made
your mind.
Crazy money?
With nothing but close-ups and tears. So it's a year since Les Mis. There's a movie version of Into the Woods coming with Anna Kendrick. There's another Anna Kendrick one, this small musical called The Next 5 Years. But it's a weird period for actual movie musicals. You know, people have been predicting the return of it since Chicago, and it hasn't really happened. So we've got more of this in-between stuff going on. And I kind of wonder if everyone has kind of accepted that we're not going to return to the era of classical movie musicals and that is just over and we're going to do different stuff. Or if you guys think that we're kind of inching our way back toward it and Frozen is kind of a half measure.
Well, what defines the classic musical for you? I think that's important. What is there to be inched back towards?
I mean, something in which there's no embarrassment about telling your story through song and dance, in which you're not trying to come up with ways to work around people singing their feelings and spontaneously breaking out of the
song. I don't think modern musicals do that. How does that happen?
I mean, Chicago had that insane frame story where they would zoom in on people's eyes to make it look like it was all happening in their imaginations. I think Les Mis, with the close-ups and with the focus on live singing, was trying to do like a, no, this is real. It's not like a fake musical. It's a real musical. And and animated movies have done better than this. I think Tangled has some really good songs too, and as is Frozen. But I think there is still some hesitance to feel, people feel like they're going to feel fake if they do a traditional, like, straight up storytelling through
music.
Well,
I think it's a difference between allowing yourself to directors allowing theatrics into their film or trying to make these musicals naturalistic, or have a movie that's ingrained in a musical style like Inside Llewyn Davis, which is not something I'd call a musical by like Broadway definitions, but it's obviously intertwined with the genre and the era that it's talking about, so that it's open to realism, whereas, you know, something like Les Mis. And what's interesting about Frozen is that it attempts to be more like Les Mis and one of these sung through musicals, as opposed to something that's more theatric and more like Disney's classic animated musicals that harken back to, you know, Music Man or any of the movies Singing in the Rain. Like, they take breaks and have these moments that are more theatrical. And movies can get away with it. We just don't allow ourselves to, in movies today, to really separate. They have to be realistic as opposed to theatrical. So I see three categories here. The theatrical musical, which can fit into cinema, realist musicals, and then films like Inside Llewyn Davis, where we are connected to the music, something deeper.
See, I don't see that at all. I see more the destruction of all categories. I see it sort of blurring into a hodgepodge. I mean, obviously, certain musicals stylistically fit into an older form, and, you know, I acknowledge that when they set out, they say that this is going to be a traditional musical like they did with Les Mis, or what they're going to do with Annie, which will be a traditional musical and everything save for the, you know, modern interpretations of the songs.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I'm interested.
But no, but I mean, I feel like more and more recently, what Katie was saying at the beginning as to whether or not we're moving further away from the traditional musical or bending back towards it, I think it's both and neither. I think that we are sort of returning to the hybrid form, where I think, you know, everything seems relevant except for the definition of musical. I was watching Robert Altman's Nashville a lot this month in advance of Criterion's release of it in early December, and he, on the Blu-ray commentary, you know, he's dead now, but the Blu-ray commentary was recorded for an older disc a while ago. He is very adamant that Nashville is a musical, even though it also has live singing, by the way. All that bullshit about Les Mis being the first film to do that is exactly that. But it is very much a musical. It's a 160-minute movie, or an hour of it is people singing songs that very strongly, as in any traditional musical, convey their deepest emotions.
But they're
songs
also being performed within the context of the film. They're
right.
supposed
and,
to be singing these songs as opposed to conveying, instead of dialogue, they're singing at each other. That's
right. It's not unlike Once or something like that, to draw a more recent example. And it's actually very similar to Once. And then you have films like Dancer in the Dark, where it's a traditional musical, but feels like a hybrid because it incorporates the sort of diegetic sounds of her world and, you know, certainly takes some licenses with the traditional musical. But I think that, like, Inside Llewyn Davis, to me, qualifies like a musical as much as anything else. I think you said a really narrow definition if you say it can only be things shot on Technicolor, you know, that have dance breaks and reprises and all these things, and that the Golden Globes decide are a musical. And I think that film is fighting, you know, every bone in its body of film is fighting against those definitions.
Well, I don't think noticing lines between these types of filmmaking is the same thing as Golden Globe categorization. I mean, that's a little
unfair. Are right. You are right.
I would like the Golden Globes to make all of the rules from now on. That
like Inside Llewyn Davis will fit into the comedy musical category, just
will
for
it?
The record. Yes. And
I'm
so
sure
will,
it will.
You know, one of the big controversies of that, and this is kind of a testament to the Golden Globes and the blurring line, is that My Week with Marilyn made the comedy musical category because it had
a
song.
Comedy.
It wasn't a comedy.
But didn't they make the – wasn't it? No,
they
but
put songs in it just so that it would make
category.
The category. It was notorious.
Well, no, but I think it's very interesting to see sort of what – I don't know, like what could constitute a musical, where the line is, what constitutes a musical number. I think sound in the ways that it's developed in movies has become so complex in the way that it reflects on the action you see on screen that it defies easy categorization unless you have these big show-stopping numbers where that announce themselves like this is a musical.
I think the thing here is what type of format fits the story. It's not that we have to, you know, that musicals are one thing and movies about music are in another. It's how do you best tell this story through music that lends itself to the narrative, that lends itself to the form. You know, there are certain shows that I would say adapt them from Broadway in a certain style that you don't want a realist take. You know, I appreciate what Les Mis was trying to do because singing through the musical was essential to the musical. You know, they didn't have the Broadway show doesn't stop and then everyone jazz hands and then they do a big dance number. It has to be one. It's an opera. It's different.
But you do recognize that the Les Mis film is a hate crime. You're not.
I don't recognize that fact because I don't hate it as much as you, but obviously
no one hates it as much as David.
Oh my god.
It's not
that's
a successful
that might be the
effort.
Worst movie of this year as well as the worst movie of last year. If like residual pain counts.
But you can understand why they wanted to keep that element intact. That's the DNA of the show. So you have to do
yes.
that. But what's interesting about Frozen is that it tries to be a Broadway show first and not a movie. And I think it kind of It falls apart.
What do you mean by that, Patches?
I mean that it's trying to sing through the show. It's trying to be like if you've ever seen Wicked on Broadway or any stage, you'll know that they'll have big musical numbers, but then they'll also transition to moments where they're dialoguing through song. So it's a little blurred line between what Les Mis is and maybe like The Music Man, where we're stopping and having a big number. And that doesn't really work in the film. And we'll get onto this in the review segment later in the week. But you can't really have those characters singing at each other, and it needs to have the format that is so ingrained from these traditional Disney movies. They cracked it, you know. Aladdin can pull away and have a big extravagant number because it needs to push animation. Or Little Mermaid, you know, we can kiss the girl, needs to be a number because we're pushing the animation form and we're telling stories through musical numbers as opposed to just singing through. And for some reason, it doesn't really translate when Frozen tries to do the Wicked thing. And I don't know, you know, it's a risky move for them. It was an interesting choice.
I mean,
but there are delineations here that some stories work better as song and dance numbers and other movies don't.
I like the where you ended up, because for me, the difference is we're not getting them like we used to, because those are, you know, huge musicals were an era when they were like the pinnacle of Broadway. So it's like, come down to Broadway, make the trip to New York, come see theater where it happens. And then we got, you know, the big Technicolor musicals, because it was like, come see these huge sets, you know, we're going to do South Pacific on a real beach where you've never seen it before, you know, it's going to be huge, and the bat power of cinema. And then the Disney movies very much came from the idea of how are we going to, you know, take all these short comedy gag bits and put them together with the silly symphonies, which Disney was very famous for at the time, and sort of stretch this out into a narrative. And so they could have sort of accidentally stumbled across the musical genre that they, you know, Menken sort of tightened up in the Little Mermaid, you know, Belle era, adding the I want trope to, you know, Disney movies.
That had been around before them.
But
has an I want song.
Yes, but I think by happenstance and not by design. But that's okay. not the point I was trying
sorry,
to get.
Sorry, digression.
The point I was trying to get is that I'm not exactly sure what the huge thing that movie musicals would be showing off. I think the closest that we've got is they've gotten really close to both real musicals and film musicals to sort of like what the remix culture is, where not something like Pitch Perfect, which is more like a Glee sort of grafting, but almost something like a Mamma Mia or Moulin Rouge, where it's, you know, about the spectacle of these pop songs, and that justifies there being a story, not so much that these pop songs only told one specific story. But it's like, I don't know, I think that I'm really looking forward to like a musical that would do 3D really well, and I'm also looking forward to when Paramount finally exercises the Trey Parker and Matt Stone right to make a Book of Mormon. Movie.
I was just thinking about the movie Pina as a very good example of, I mean, I would consider that a song and dance film that really does an amazing job of kind of bouncing between the narrative, a documentary element, of course, but having showstoppers. I mean, it's a different type of movie, but it's very much like this needs to be a movie about theatrics. And of course, documentary makes that a lot easier and a lot more palatable. But I do think that we don't see that much theatrics in our movies anymore. Maybe Baz Luhrmann keeps
theatrics.
It going, but I certainly don't think Gatsby is like, you know, movies of the 50s and 60s, and this is just because of how they were made, we could tell they were on sets. And we, you know, everything was very organized. They can have a big dance scene in the middle of the street because we know it's fake. But maybe we appreciate that because now they can jump up in unison on, you know, the storefront and, like, do a jig. And, you know, there's an element of awareness in these movies that you don't see very often in musicals, and I feel like Frozen kind of addresses that point, that, you know, we're beyond what the older Disney films would do, and that suddenly we need to be more realistic. We can't be theatrical.
I really would like to see that kind of. I think that theatricality has translated over into action in a way. Like I keep thinking of.
Yes.
I keep thinking of Inception and the big sequence where they have the hallway fight scene and there's the multiple layers of action. And it's this huge showstopper number. It's very self-aware. It's really drawing attention to itself, and then you kind of get to the end, and everybody breathes. And you can't really believe what you've gone through. It's got the exact same rhythm that a musical number would have had in a previous kind of genre, and I don't understand why we accept that kind of self-aware spectacle. But not something on the level of a musical. I don't know if it's just that taste has changed to the point that we haven't seen that in so long, but I do feel like that's not that big a leap for modern audiences.
I don't necessarily follow the argument that we don't accept that anymore. I mean, I think that the financial success of something like Les Mis suggests that that isn't really a problem. It's ditto that of Mamma Mia and something like that. I just think that
I wouldn't equate the two necessarily. Les Mis is trying to be more realist. Like, it was the time for Les Mis finally because people could accept a sing-through opera. It feels more real. Like, we're chasing that. And then you see a movie like Hairspray basically kind of fizzle out. I mean, it's not a very good movie, but you know what?
Hairspray made a pretty good amount of money.
I mean, it's just, yeah, but it landed with a thud. You know, people had to see it because they really liked Hairspray the musical, which is a really good show, and it just didn't, the movie version doesn't really work for some reason.
I liked it. You know what? I'm an easy sell on a musical.
Fair enough.
You know where the movie musicals of old sort of still sort are at play for me in cinema is in all of the Muppet movies, even the new ones, because not only do you have,
my God,
like,
don't get me started.
Sort of, you literally have a let's put on a show sort of thing, but they, at least not so much with the newest Muppet movie, but to a certain extent with all Muppet movies because of the nature of what they are, you do have literally a filmed spectacle, so very rarely is it not a whole bunch of people operating puppets and pretending like they're real. So you get a little bit of that magic in there, maybe, but apparently Patches wants to yell, so maybe not.
Well, the new Muppet music, the newest Muppet movie did fail as a musical and in a lot of different ways. So I did feel like the way that it mistreated its use of music.
Yeah, except for the Kermit song.
Well, the interesting thing about that is the Muppet movies are more like Inside Llewyn Davis. And the early Muppet movies are successful versions of that. And the most recent Muppet movie is trying to do what Inside Llewyn Davis does and fails completely. It's horrible. I mean, it just can't integrate the music. It can't find a soul that the music and the movie share. And it really just can't. It can't pull it off.
Well, what was the most? What's the most modern movie musical? And I mean, like, written modern, not like the modern
like
iteration
for the
written
for the screen.
Or, like, anything that, you know, I can understand if Patches enjoyed Les Mis, but Les Mis was written not for that, like, thing of, yeah, written for the screen or it adapted specifically for the movies.
I mean, there have been a number recently. There was, like, a Dutch film a few years ago called Yes, Nurse, No Nurse that was the musical. There was once, and there was a horrific, like, ghastly movie that the guy from Once made that's coming out next year called Can a Song Save Your Life?
I feel like we've heard you complain about
it. And oddly enough, lots of people love it, so we'll take this.
Yeah. That was probably the worst film I saw this year, but I did not qualify it because it has not been released. And so he's definitely, you know, on that bandwagon. I feel like there's a couple, but, you know, it's not easy writing a musical, so.
No. Right. But there are complete geniuses, like the people, you know, the Robert Lopez who helped write Book of Mormon and the song Frozen is amazing.
Something like The Great Gatsby is only, you know, it's only because of its attention and its focus that it's not a musical. It certainly has all of the songs needed to function as a full-fledged musical and uses them as such. It just, you know, calls attention to the drama. Right. No one's actually
actually performing.
Although
it.
I don't think we're getting a supercalifragilisticexpialidocious anytime in the modern age. I don't know.
No, but I mean, there's no purpose for that.
Why not?
That specific, because that was written so a live action person could dance with penguins. Like, it's still,
you know,
the
there's a movie about this coming out.
that's what jogging my memory about it.
Right. No, I mean, but the point being is, it's still, you know, let's put on a show and like a movie thing. It's hard for me to think about a movie that was written for the screen that specifically, like, felt like the songs were integral to the storytelling. It's almost always adaptations, and I think it's just because it's a hard thing to pull off, both with the abbreviated.
Well, then why does
time.
It work for the theater so much more than film? I mean, why can't we do this?
I think because it is a spectacle. Like, regardless of you know, if another person being, you know, at 50 feet away from you and putting on a legitimate performance is going to have that spectacle that movie needs to keep, you know, sending Michael Bay squirrel paratroopers at for Transformers 3 to capture that sort of thing.
I mean, Michael Bay could make a musical that was crazy and intense.
I would love that. Yeah. I would so see that. Jesus Christ.
Well, it's funny. I mean, obviously movies are spectacles, and we should be able to have that same visceral reaction to someone showing, you know, singing and dancing. I mean, I watch, going back to music videos, you watch something like Bjork's Oh So Quiet, and you, like, love that song and dance, and you feel her movement through this environment. It's totally fake, but it's like, it gets you jazzed, right? I mean, why can't we capture that kind of whimsy in a movie? I mean, it's the same
And we're also in this period where we have movie stars. I mean, there's Hugh Jackman, and you got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and even Channing Tatum, like, people who enjoy singing and dancing. Like, we've got the talent to do it. I mean, Anna Kendrick is taking up all the roles, but I feel like now is, like, people aren't afraid to show off their musical talents anymore. If Wolverine can sing and dance, then everybody can. So why not take advantage of it?
I think, I mean, the hurdle there, I think, is sort of that, you know, when you see these other actors that you got used to as actors doing it, you sort of get, like, this Seth MacFarlane bad taste in your mouth that, like, oh, they're doing the song and dance thing now.
Oh, really?
Like, I feel, don't you guys feel like that's,
I feel,
like,
that way about
audience?
Seth MacFarlane, but not about people who I like.
You think anybody that's X-Men Origins Wolverine was like, I wonder how the boy from Oz is doing right now?
I mean, plenty of people saw Les Mis, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know if those were the Wolverine people, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that's what's keeping, I think, a lot of movie musicals coming to the plate, because the easiest thing to do with them is, you know, like, Dr. Horrible or Team America, or, like, let's
something
just take all the tropes
cheek.
And, yeah.
It's well, funny, though, because, I mean, obviously we are not at a moment in filmmaking where original ideas are prioritized by studios, but the theater kid fan base is so strong and alive. It always will be, because let's be honest, they're loud and they love it.
Says former theater kid Matt.
I mean, that's how I know. I was embedded. I was a war journalist for theater kids. but they're definitely going to come out in droves to see stuff like Les Mis. So why not have an original musical that you have to go see in theaters, that you have to buy the singles off iTunes? I mean, the Glee phenomenon should really wake people up to the fact that they would watch a musical that could be somewhat original. I mean, obviously they're doing covers, but you can kind of build up that same excitement
yeah.
or something that you
yeah,
have to see in the theater.
Yeah, but it's also the appeal of a musical. I mean, I think a lot of the appeal of the musical and the reason that they have so many what's the Broadway term when they come back? Revivals. Is that they familiarity. I mean, it's like slipping into an old glove with those things. You want to go see Les Mis because you want to hear Anne Hathaway sing On My Own. That's the song she sings, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
No. Nope.
No.
I Dreamed a Dream.
I Dreamed a Dream, right. I knew I was not right. Anyway, and so I think that writing a new musical has that as an implicit obstacle that does not face other genres. And I think even with something like Dancer in the Dark, which is the best musical ever made, I think everyone can agree, is the audience, like, you know, wise audiences come to it with a certain familiarity with Bjork. And so it's like hearing a new Bjork album, which is very exciting for that particular audience. So I think that familiarity is very important to these things and part of what makes it so difficult to get a new musical off the ground.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different things, but the weird thing about, like, the Glee effect versus an actual movie musical effect is the Glee stuff is kind of easy. It's just licensing deals and flashy
yeah.
editing, whereas, like, making a legitimate musical that works thematically and performance-wise and people want to see over and over again is just hard.
Yeah. I really dread the idea of the Glee movie where it's just a bunch of, I mean, I guess Mamma Mia was that, but if that is what we wind up with, I take back everything I said about wanting more musicals.
So was Moulin Rouge. We got there early.
That's
and got,
true.
Got
That's
it
true.
Out of the way.
I love Moulin Rouge, so if that version I can handle, but please make more musicals and please make them good. And if you want to remake The Music Man, you actually have my blessing. I'd love to see that.
Michael Bay.
Pain and Gain, the musical. Please, God.
That terrifies me.
David, that was pandering to you. You didn't even respond.
Huh?
Yeah.
We ya fuck the hottest girl them round ya. Girl from down the country and girl from down the town ya. If you check the phone ya, Kimona, Simona, and Sonia, Ramona. Tell you hear the sound ya. Call Kiki and tell him send me a pona. At the highest grade because we like smell the aroma. When me touch him, but the girl them say ya, we are the cone ya.
That does it for today's episode of Fighting in the War Room. We'll be back on Friday after your Thanksgiving holiday festivities with a review of Frozen, which we've talked about just a little bit here, but we have so many more snowman jokes to make, so please come back for that part of it. In the meantime, tell the people who you are and where you can find the show now, because there's some new information.
I know. Get your pen and paper ready. I am Matt Patches. I write all across the internet and try and compile what I do on mattpatches.com. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, we are on iTunes. It's a new feed, so you got to resubscribe. Fighting in the War Room. You can search. It's very easy. And please, if you like this show, if you liked us in the past, we're trying to build some new momentum. So leave a review, leave a rating, say some words. It will really help us out.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm the senior editor of Film.com. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich and at Film.com. And I would be very happy if you went to Film.com. You can also find all of us on Facebook. What's our new Facebook name? Fighting in the War Room?
Fighting in the War Room. We're
Fighting
working
in
on
the
a
War Room.
We're working on a shorter version, but that's it for now.
Yeah, please join us there.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. I spell that first part DA7E, which is also my Twitter handle, and I mostly write at latino-review.com about superhero movie news. But if you want to get in touch with us, not only are there comments and things like that at fightinginthewarroom.com, but you can call our voicemail. Used to be the Opkino voicemail. Maybe that's still what the outgoing message
says. I believe
says.
That it's still the outgoing message, but maybe we'll change that.
Yeah, call and see if we've changed it yet at 914-410-6450. You can ask us questions. You can yell at us. Don't review the theme song. Thank you very much.
I regret anything I ever said about the theme song. I'm Katie Rich. For this week, I work nowhere. Starting next week, I'll be the Hollywood editor at VanityFair.com. You can always find me on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRich. On Twitter, you can also find the show at FITWR. If you followed Up Kino before, the same feed. If you weren't following before, what are you waiting for? Because you can follow us and then get to do things like answer this week's lightning round question, which was...
In honor of the holiday weekend, what's 2013's biggest turkey?
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back talking to you on Friday.
And if he stays, I'll wait for him in the morning. I'm a thousand pieces of lead. If he stays, then I'll wait for him in the morning. I'm a thousand pieces of lead. If he stays, I'll wait for him in the morning. I'm a thousand pieces of lead. If he stays, then I'll wait for him in the morning. I'm a thousand pieces of light.